Welcome to a second season of this here Thriving Moment, brought to you from a ministry unto its own, the Sovereign Life Talk Show. Live from Belize in Central America, I am your hostess, Reverend Maria Arvanitidis. And with us here today, a very special guest. I'm so rad. Are you excited? From Illinois, Chicagoland, Esther Annette Fontaine. Welcome to the show.
Oh, my friend, welcome. And how are you today?
Good, and I don't think I've heard my middle name since I was a little girl and my mother was mad.
Well, I could be very well. So, folks, this episode is on connecting to faith through spirituality with Esther, our guest, Fontaine, seeing she doesn't want me to say her middle name. Okay. So, from a Harley recreational drive to an 18-wheeler across America, we introduce to you Esther, the professional commercial she's been driving since October 1986 and has driven limos, taxis, fire buses, coach buses, tour buses, city buses, school buses, and all sorts of trucks and anything on wheels, you name it. She's a nomad in her company's semi-truck for the past 18 months around the Michigan area, USA. For the past 21 years has been residing in Chicagoland. So let me tell you a little bit more about who Esther is. She was the sixth of seven children born on March 23rd, 1964 in Butte, Montana to Bonnie and Clark Fontaine. From 1971 to 79, lived in Portland, Oregon, and very curious about the Hare Krishna and many other religions, starting with the Baptist Church to Pentecostal Mormon. Her strict Baptist impositions had her expressing from inside the box the portrait of a straight girl. She tried three times at marriage, made three children, two boys and a girl. That was not enough, so she came out of the box and for 12 years had a wife by marrying a woman. At 15 years of age, her mother threw her out after they moved and with her sister back to Montana. She ended up in two foster homes until her first marriage, and her first son was born in Washington. From there, Esther moved to California and started going to the Napa Valley Police Academy for 9 months. Before the police department could hire her as a police officer, she was already pregnant again with her second son. A year later, she moved back to Montana to take care of her grieving mother from the passing of her grandma. In Montana, she found herself getting involved with the Baha'i Faith tribe at the Montana State Prison for Men in Deer Lodge as the third female correctional officer. After 3 years, got divorced and married again, got a university degree in criminal justice and sociology from Great Falls, Montana. As a certified private investigator and correctional officer, moving right along with Pastor Jay Baker of New Lives Community Church into her non-denominational ordination from the Universal Church of Christ. She is now a pastor and read many versions of the Bible, Bhagavad Gita, Quran, Kabbalah studies, etc. Many versions of the Tao Chiang. In 2017, Esther returned to university and received her master's in Vedic science, this consciousness and human potential, from Maharishi International University of Fairfield, Iowa in December 2020. Esther has dabbled in Adamic Zoroastrianism, Zoroastrianism, Hindu, Buddhist, and Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and promotional supporter of international leadership development in artificial intelligence, Esther's detached mindset from all religious constructs and has never stopped investigating different faiths. She's a seeker, perceived by her as a vessel being of spiritual expression. This space that Esther will share with us, her faith through transcendental meditation to empower and help heal from mental illness. And her favorite quote is, "I mastered failure, but look at me now," shifting from a survivor of life to creator of life with Esther's power of thoughts, words, and life energy here with us to share her light and sovereignty of light.
A lot.
No, Esther.
Sounds like so much, but I just turned 60. So that was all spread out over, you know, my whole life. And actually, my most favorite quote is, "There's always another way." So never to be attached to any certain way to do something, because there's always another way for something to occur. When I was at my birthday party in Arizona 2 weeks ago, one of my closest friends from Chicago flew in, and we were all sitting around the table eating dinner, and she said, of all your 60 years, you know, what's the most important thing you've learned, or the one message that you would share with anybody about life, you know? And she's looking maybe for some real deep spiritual, you know, enlightenment. And
yes.
What I have truly cognized through my entire life experience, you know, the cyclical thing of the roller coaster, up and down, right? The most important thing that I've come to realize, and I'm really focused on it this year, as I go into the third part of my life, is relationships are the most important things. Totally relationships. And you get to define for yourself what those relationships are, okay? So if it's a relationship with your children, with your spouse, with your family, for myself, I grew up in a very dysfunctional and fractured family. So most of my blood relatives, I am not close with them at all. The divine intelligence of the universe has brought me people very close to me, that are, I consider my family. And so I told everybody sitting at the table that, the only thing that we leave here when we die are memories, the memories we create with the people we interact with. And the older you get, as your friend, some of your friends and family members die off, you start to realize what's really important right now. Is it being all freaked out because something isn't cleaned exactly the same way, or somebody was late for something? And so I took some time out to just go, okay, if I were literally dying, because over the last couple of years, I've sat at the deathbed of a couple of my friends and some family members who've passed away from cancer. And I've watched family come in to see them and to greet them and say goodbye to them and share their memories with them. And so I really thought, if I were the one laying in the deathbed, how many people would really show up? Because I've been interactive in international business for years. How many people would show up, and would they have a good story to tell, or would they have some horrible nightmare story back when I used to get really drunk and act crazy, you know, in my younger years? And I thought, So I just really started contemplating that. And I started making some phone calls and just re-engaging with friendships that I hadn't been connected to in a long time, just to make sure that if there was any mess in that relationship, that I cleared up that energy or that karma, that if I'd ever offended them that I didn't know about, or did we grow apart just because we got families or our jobs or education where our lives splintered and we went off? Because I learned a long time ago from a great mentor of mine, her name is Shelley Blansey. She's the first one who told me, which is a very common cliche in the personal growth and development industry, is sometimes people come into your life for a season and a reason. I had a lot of abandonment issues because of the things in my childhood. So once somebody would come into my life, I never wanted them to leave, like to the point where even if it was abusive and tremendously painful and unhealthy for me, at least I knew how to deal with that, because I grew up in crisis addiction. I grew up in trauma. I grew up in dysfunction. I grew up in abuse. So those, even though they were bad for me, those were common denominators of what I knew was certain. I knew that if somebody did drugs or did alcohol in my family, they were going to get violent. So I, there was a certainty, even though the action was going to be bad and dangerous, it was certainty. And so as I began to get older, especially working with Shelley, I discovered some things about myself. And, you know, and it's one of the reasons I think that I've studied over 400 major religions over the past 45 years of my life. And I did that because I was always going, well, where's the truth, right? Where's the truth? Well, if Jesus is all the truth, then why did the Crusades murder so many people? And why then weren't we allowed to read the Bible? And you know, why did King James take all the metaphysical doctrine and educational information that were in the original canons? Why did King James take all of that out? And now you can only find in the Orthodox or the Geneva Bibles, right? And if the Muslim faith is everything, then why do we have people murdering people in the name of God, right? Like, if you look at all religions, they use this construct of the rules that they've created around an invisible spiritual energy for them to understand what it means to them. They then create rules and boxes for us to fit inside to make them comfortable. And so I lived most of my life as a lesbian in marriages, doing the right thing. You grow up and get married and have babies. That's what the Baptist and basically the Christian faith teaches you, regardless of how comfortable or uncomfortable it was. I stayed with a very abusive husband who was very violent toward me, because going to the church, going to the religious leaders, getting counseling, well, you have to stay with your husband. Finally, I broke away from that. I sent him to prison, and I started to grow some. Where I'm at in life right now is I don't do a lot of, I guess, large socializing like I used to. I have a very close-knit group of friends that I talk to almost daily, and I talk to my daughter a lot. I talk to my sons frequently, and I just want this part of my life to be, I don't want to be bothered. And not that I'm so good that I don't want to be bothered. It's just that time is so fleeting and so limiting that I think it's my largest commodity right now. And I don't want to spend it on things that truly don't matter. We've got a whole big election year going on in the United States right now, as well as 41 other countries around the globe actually have elections this year. So people in the American media are already hating each other. They're willing to break up relationships, friendships, all to attack one another on what their belief politically is, on what people are telling them through the news or through, you know, these rallies they have. And the truth is, we as individuals don't know these people personally. We have no personal interaction with them. You only hear what they're saying or what's being edited to be said. And at the end of the day, a year from now, when there's either a new president or the same old president or whatever it is here in the States, how many relationships that were supposed to be meaningful in your life did you destroy over people you're probably never going to meet? And a lot of what they do is not going to have any impact on your daily life anyway. And to see the ridiculous nature of that, right? And that's in politics. We have the same thing in religion. People will absolutely personally attack and just think people are stupid or this or that. And they'll destroy relationships. They'll even destroy their own mental health to try and believe something that doesn't fit their intuition. And so that's why when I went to Maharishi in Fairfield and I studied human consciousness and human potential, I was like, what does this mean, right? There's a lot of the fundamental systems are taught through the Bhagavad Gita. And that's just because, you know, Maharishi was from India. However, if you will take out the religious construct ruling of you have to do this in order to get that, if you take that away and just go scientifically, take all the religions and look at them scientifically, which is really funny because in the Christian faith, it's like faith in God against science. I think it's completely wrong. I believe that God gave us science, and that's however you want to language God. You know, that's a term we hear use in the U.S. and in the Christian faith, but many other faiths use different names. You know, In the Tao Te Ching, they write that that which is unknown can't be named. So it's kind of like, you know, our parents give us a name, and now we have all around the world, I'm not who you named me to be, or whatever I want to identify as a different thing. And that's a whole discussion I'm not even going to get into. But what I find is human beings, on whatever their level of understanding is, we're trying to find a way or a view or a filter with which to take information we're uncertain about and process it so it makes some kind of sense for us. And I think at the end of the day, when we're taking information and bringing it into us and processing it, then we are stuck processing it through the constructs that were taught to us as children by other people. And what I tell my friends is that's, you know, I call that the canvas of our soul. We are born with this soul, this invisible energy that will animate this physical form, okay? Energy is invisible. It animates this physical form. Once that energy leaves this body, the body begins to rot, okay? So that's the spiritual energy that gives us life. And you can call it your soul, your spirit. I think it's a divine energy from the universe that gives us all life. And I think it's in all things, not just human beings. But what happens is we grow up with a certain set of beliefs because that's what our parents teach us. That's what our religious leaders teach us. That's what our schools teach us. And right now we live in a world where the majority of the population is being raised on the internet with a lot of confusion about what's true and what isn't. And so we have society that doesn't have community attachments, I believe, anymore like we used to. I was just driving around today with my friend, and I'm like, wow, you know, everybody's so cranky today. The Midwest, generally, in America, people used to go, oh, you got to go to the Midwest. Everybody there, they're so friendly. Hello. Hi, ma'am. Yes, sir. People are helping you. And people are so detached from one another now, either by being too busy or not being socially active like they used to, that they're cranky. Human beings are social creatures. And we need to begin similar to animals, in that animals operate from the inside out, not the outside in. You know, when an animal gets up, it knows, I got to get up and I've got to go hunt my prey and I've got to eat. Okay. Human beings have this concept of this higher intelligence, right? But we're the only beings on the earth that force ourselves to sleep when we're not tired. We force ourselves to get up when we are tired. We force ourselves to eat when we're not hungry, and we don't eat when we are hungry. We do things counterintuitive to what it is to live this human experience. Now, there has to be some kind of a control model just out of respect for life itself. So you can't act on all of your whims, especially people who have mental illness. When you have a mental illness, which is a chemical disorder in the brain's not functioning properly. It's not unlike somebody whose body jerks or you have Tourette's and you say things. You know, when the brain isn't at its peak performance, then the human body and the human mind don't behave in a cohesive manner to this, you know, divine intelligence that gives us life. So when you're out of alignment with that, you definitely can't act on everything you feel because you will injure yourself or others. So how do we fix that? Well, the number one thing is the best way to change a society is you only have control genuinely of one human being, and it's yourself. I know some people think, well, I have children, I control them. Well, you will till a certain point, and then they'll go off. And like myself, I don't believe anything I was taught that I grew up in. I don't believe any of it. I exposed it all as a lie. I saw how the Bible's been manipulated and used to oppress people for thousands of years. I've seen how the Quran was changed and used. Every world religion was overtaken politically by some kind of a corrupt organization to use it as a weapon, as a political institution to control humanity. And there's just so much documentation of that.
It's all about supremacy, right? It's all about colonization and enslavement. That's what I think really.
Well, I don't even think it has to be a colonization. See, the term colonization, and from where I grew up, refers to white people dominating the world. Okay, so
we're a minority.
Let's talk about just power. human beings, in order to have power, regardless of where they live, they always have to make somebody else less than them. And they make them less than them generally through religious belief that I know more than you, so I'll teach you what it says. And if you can't read and write, then I really can control you, because now you're really going to know what I think is true. This is what the Catholic Church did forever and still do, not as effectively as they used to. But, you know, that's what the ministry class developed through all religions, you know, Shelley also taught me the truth will expose you or promote you. All right. Well, and eventually the truth will come out.
So, Esther, how do you take all of this and, you know, you're getting real to heal, obviously, because you're no longer being a people pleaser. But how do you take all of this to empower others with?
Well, I think that I think that people need to stop being attached to anything. Okay. Be open to everything, but attached to nothing. And what's that mean? That sounds so whimsical or like, oh, well, nobody's important to you then. No, I'm open to the idea of listening to information. I listen to it and then I see, does it give me value? Does it advance my life? Does even this relationship give me value and advance my life? Where am I going to spend my most important commodity, which is time, and the expression of my energy into the world, and allowing other people to put energy into my world? Who am I going to allow to interact with me on that level? Because it will have some impact. Every single interaction we have has an impact. It could be a big one, it could be a small one, it could be a profound and life-changing one, or it could be a very, ew, what the hell is their problem? You know, there's always a reaction. I would tell people, if you want to live the best life you can, you have to understand a few things. If you're an adult, everything that happens in your life is your choice. Okay. Well, I didn't choose to get in this car accident or this or that. No, you may not have, but you do choose how you're going to react to whatever happens. We have the capacity as these high thinking individuals in order to take information in and choose what we're going to do with it. Now, I suffered many, many, many years with a very, you know, severe mental health issue, which is bipolar disorder. And I would really get trapped in the depressive end of it for years. And I was in the poor me, the world hates me, I'm a victim. Oh my God, I should just kill myself, all of this garbage. And in 2020, during the pandemic, my friend Shelley brought me out to Arizona, where she is the vice president of a clinic. And I went out there and I was their first ketamine patient. Ketamine heals the neurotransmitters in the brain. These neurotransmitters get damaged when you're young through emotional or physical trauma. So as I said before, if you have a mental health issue, you can't always make the right decisions for your life or anybody else's life. I mean, for many, many years, I was a really horrible mother because I had a brain that wasn't operating properly. So I made decisions with information that I knew that I could barely process into a logical state. And I made all of my choices through emotion, singularly, whether it made sense or not. And probably 80% of those decisions were not meant. And I'd been practicing transcendental meditation on top of that. And transcendental meditation is a very specific type of meditation that is designed specifically, it's a technology designed specifically to work with the human body, where you're not fighting against what's natural for your body. A lot of other types of meditations, they try and get you to do all these breathing exercises, and which is great. Breathing for the body, all those exercises are really, really good for your biology. It's really good for your system. But anytime you're trying to force your mind to stop doing something, it automatically does what you tell it not to do. Transcendental meditation does not do that. It actually teaches you through a certain technique of this meditation that your body very naturally falls into, where you don't fight the thoughts, they come through and eventually they just start going through your mind and they go away without you doing anything. And before you know it, you're at a higher state of consciousness. When you come out of the meditation, you're like, oh wow, this time there were way less thoughts. There's no fighting in it, no resistance in it. It's a relaxation to let your mind do what it does. And most of the time, the brain doesn't always want to be thinking. We create those thoughts ourselves by continually taking information that we either don't understand or taking information that hurts us and trying to figure out why that happened to us. So we're always keeping this going through because the human being always wants to be right or they want to look good. And that's the ego part of our human experience, where if your spiritual side doesn't operate in ego, your egoic side is very, very strong and patterned in all of these mental constructs we're taught through whatever we're taught in life. Now, you do have mental constructs you learn that are really good for you. If you're a skilled musician, if you're a skilled writer, if you're a poet, you're an artist, you know, you're good at sports, you learn certain constructs that help you master a craft, right? And those can become obsessive too, and that'd be good for you. So moderation, right? A lot of times I have a lot of phone calls with people and they'll call me up and they'll have a problem and they'll want me to give them an answer to fix their problem, which I find is hilarious because most of the choices I made in my adult life really didn't work out that great for me. But for some reason, they trust me with these problems. So I'll generally go back and say, okay, if something is causing you disruption in life, what's the disruption about? Is it because somebody said something that hurt your feelings? You're angry. Why are you angry? Did they hurt your feelings? That's ego, because that's allowing the opinions of other people to be more important than your opinion of yourself or the opinion of the creator of who you are and what was created in who you are. Or are you mad because they didn't do it your way? So that's a power struggle. That's why I say there's always another way. Yes, we can fill a cup this way. We can make a dessert that way. We can fix a car this way. Everybody's got their skills. If somebody's more skilled at you in doing something, allow them to do it. Don't always have things your way, because one human being's way isn't the right way. And that's how we get into these troubles with these constructs, where one person is a very strong personality, which is generally because they have a very strong kinetic energy. They will be able to come in and control and manipulate other people based on charisma or fear, and get people to follow them like sheep. And then you have all kinds of people who get in cults, who get messed up in just things that are detrimental to the human experience. The human experience is supposed to be, we're born, we experience everything that we can on this planet. At some point in our growing of life, we're given the power of choice. And then we have to take responsibility for those choices. That's not really what's taught. What's generally taught in most religions are, you're a horrible piece of crap that was born, and only the teaching of somebody who knows more than you and who was greater than you can redeem you from this horrible piece of crap you are. And I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense, because some of the first lines in the Christian faith are, and we were created in God's image.
Weird.
So God didn't like himself?
No, but
no, just think of it logically. So if I'm created in the image of God, if I'm created in the image of God,
I'm supposed to be a man.
If I'm created in the image of God and we're supposed to love God above all things, did God not, was God taking all the scraps of what was shit of himself and throwing it on the planet and going, now I have to redeem you because you're all such trash? I mean, think about that seriously. If we're created in the image of a being that then says, you're so horrible that I have to send my son to die for you and redeem you, now I have to kill another buddy who's created in my image. It's absolutely ridiculous. I think that one of the biggest shames on this planet is that, well, in America, growing up as kids, there's this little rhyme that they used to say to us. If we, you know, something would happen to us as kids, somebody would say something mean to you in school. It was very common for our parents to go, now just remember, sticks and stones will break your bones, but names will never hurt you. Well, that's a lie. I barely remember any time I got in any little fist fight with anybody. But I remember almost every horrible word that was ever said to me because words are energy.
So what
words
do
are
you think?
living things.
So what do you think of the possibility of Jesus Christ being an actual hologram and never really being real, but a constructed hologram?
I believe that Jesus was a physical human being. I believe in progressive knowledge. Okay. I believe sometime around 27,000 years ago that whatever group of human beings that were on this planet, and they weren't the Egyptians, created this the amazing art of the pyramids. I mean, the pyramids are so precise that in our current world, we don't have anything that could build those pyramids the way they were. So I think from some of the evidence that I've studied that around 27,000 years ago, this planet got hit by comets or asteroids and blew the planet up. There are only a few human beings left, and we had to start all over. I believe this has happened multiple times on this planet. And so I believe that Jesus was the fifth or sixth of human. I believe that Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, and Baha'u'llah of the Baha'i faith. I believe that they were all very enlightened. I'm not going to call them religious leaders. I'm going to call them enlightened human beings with very strong kinetic energy that came here to advance the human society. Krishna as well. I don't believe that these are allegories or whatever. Now, in our current world with the science we have, oh, I very, very, and with what I know of AI, because I'm in the AI world paying for the development of AI, it would not be out of a reasonable possibility that a government or a group of people, in order to control a society, American society, for them to have a return of Jesus hologram.
Oh, okay. So
I can see that happening.
Yeah.
I believe Jesus was a physical human being, that he was a bloodline descendant of King David of the Davidic throne. I believe that a lot of the Bible gives us the truth and history, but so many books have either been rewritten or removed from the Bible that the full truth isn't there.
And you can thank Constantine for that.
Yeah, and Constantine was a pagan. Constantine was like, you guys are having religious disruption. There wasn't a Christian faith. There were Jews and progressive Jews, and they were all fighting because some believed Jesus was a Messiah and some didn't. And so they're fighting, and he's like, your fighting is disrupting my happiness and my kingdoms. So he took all the religious leaders, threw them all in this one area, and you guys have to figure it out. So that's when the development of the canons, which became the New Testament, were brought about following the Torah. Okay. So, and they still weren't agreeing. So finally he cut off food and water to them until they came to an understanding. And that's when the name Jesus was created. That's not even his name. The Jews didn't want this new group of believers calling him Yeshua, because that was blasphemous, because that was the name spoken in the Holy Temple.
Oh,
you can't say what they said in Moses' day, right?
Really? Wasn't he a Palestinian?
There's no,
you know?
Here's the misconception. There's no Palestine. There's no Palestinians. Even in the modern world, what's going on over there right now is absolute garbage. There is 10,000 years of history of the Hebrews to the Jews through a very specific genetic line through King David. See, David was a king, and then there was a split, and we got the Levites who became the high priests, all right? And that was supposed to be the miracle of Jesus. The Immaculate Conception of Jesus wasn't that Mary got pregnant without sex, which is absolute garbage. What it was is that when Jesus was born, the DNA that he had from Joseph's side, which was Levi's, which was the high priest side, it was the spiritual side, Mary's from the Levites, and then Joseph being from David's lineage. See, the name Christ is not a last name, it's a title. Everybody who's a descendant of King David is a Christ, because it is the kingship of the Davidic throne. So when Mary and Joseph got together and Jesus was conceived, it brought back the high priesthood and the kingdom together. It was no longer split. And that was the miracle that was allowed to happen. Because those two power structures were separated long before that on purpose because it was too powerful.
So what do
so
you think about
what
the
happens
Elohim?
Then the Christian,
what do you think about the Elohim and the Nephilim? Do you believe that they existed and how they started conceiving with the women, the human women, with something to do with blood and mixing with the women's blood to create humans? And now we have false bloodshed that creates wars because men cannot bleed like women. And the whole concept of where do women belong in all of this? I mean, do the rules and the legal system even, does it qualify women into their game? I mean, are we even part of this whole?
I think that's what's happened in the modern world, and real modern, I'm talking about like the last 50 years, led by the United States of America. I think the feminist movement was one of the worst things that happened for women on this planet, and I'll tell you why. Okay. Now, I do fully understand there has been oppression of women all over the world, and there still is. The feminist movement was supposed to be that we are equal beings, we're all born equal, okay? Yeah. But then it got taken to a political structure. Now, understand this. They politicized something that made sense and turned it into something there isn't. Okay.
But where do women belong in all of this structure okay. and the legal
so
system?
We're the birth givers. We give life. We give life. We're the womb holders. Long ago, it was a man's job to protect the woman. Why? Not because we're not strong enough to fight for ourselves, which is true. Men, 92% of the time, are stronger than women. They just are. And we need to not be threatened by that. We need to be grateful that if men are going to be willing to protect a female, don't see that as our weakness. See that as our gift. See, men didn't see women weaker than them until they started putting it in books and movies. Men, historically, in all cultures, protected women because women gave life. You couldn't have children and regenerate your tribe or your society without your women. So it was first started out that men protected the females so they could have the babies. And then in our country, it turned into this, oh, you guys think you're better than us. No. So now we have an upside down society in America. I don't know what the rest of the world's going on, but right now we have a whole two generations of men who don't know how to be men. They're scared to death. If they're 25 and under, most of them can't even leave the house because they've got social anxiety disorder. They don't know how to date. They're addicted to Pornhub. They're waiting for the VR sex stuff to come out so they don't even have to interact with another human being. So now we're looking at, we have so much technology that men don't have to get their feelings hurt by women, and women think they're more than what they were designed to be. And so we have a society that's not connected, and they aren't going to be repopulating the earth. And it's all controlled. Now, who's controlling it? I don't know that information.
Okay.
I think that women are put on the planet as a very specific gift of species of the human beings to give life. I think that our role is not to say we don't need men and that we're better than men. I think that our goal is to say that we are equal human beings born in two different bodies. And that it's the fact that we have two different bodies that make us unique, and that we're supposed to cohabitate and appreciate one another for who we are.
Okay.
And not to try and see, there's nobody who's better. None of us are better than anybody else. See, that's the problem.
Yeah, but let's bring the legal
We're
system
all,
into this.
All different.
Yeah, let's bring the legal system into this, because somewhere along the line, the legal system was helping with all of this. And it kind of did, it evolved. Remember the 80s? Well, some countries are still stuck in the 80s with their legislation system, with their rules and regulations and their acts. They don't even have women included into the system that makes them above the system or below the system, including like in the 90s. It wasn't until the 90s that we started regulating acts and legislations and bodies of governing through these kind of entitlements, because men had always that chip on their shoulder of entitlement. So women did not belong anywhere in their rule books. That made them either below or above the law, you know, until the 90s, when we started structuring.
And that's where you go back. That's where you go to the concept of better than, and better than is expressed through oppression. Okay. Now, why are more women oppressed than men?
There's no regulating
body. I don't know the data. I don't know the data and the statistics. I'm sure there are thousands of studies.
There was no regulating bodies. There was no regulating bodies to include them as well. So where do they belong? They're either not included, and they have to create their own. They, you know, the rules and regulations do not apply to a woman, especially here in Belize. When you look at their acts, if you try to become even a reverend, you're not. Good luck with that if you don't have a husband.
Well,
you know,
yeah, you know, and that goes back to power. I believe at some point in time, the whole planet was run by women, and we made just as big a mistake as men did. Okay, human beings, whether you're male or female, men are definitely innately more aggressive. Okay,
that's a part of their DNA. They need to be put in their place by a matriarchal system that doesn't give that false bloodshed that they need to have in order to replace women. And they fight amongst each other about this, I'm better than you. Once they exclude women from the picture, it's all war and bloodshed, and everything becomes a weapon.
Well, and I think that was true until maybe the last 15 years. And then you turn on YouTube and you see women, young women, teenage females that become tremendously aggressive, and everybody videotapes it and thinks it's awesome, and they're out there beating the shit out of another. Female gang members have dramatically increased. And then I'm sorry, I can't remember who I was talking to about the other day,
but
I was also
toxic patriarchy. That's the toxic patriarchy.
Right. And it's being very supported because it keeps women unempowered and against one another. Because if you take women and you get us together, and just think all about, this is all a sociological, political construct, okay? In Middle Eastern countries, women are covered up so nobody else sees them. They're controlled by their men. You have to be married. You got to be a virgin. You got to be something less than I am, right? In America, women have so flipped the script that they don't think men are good enough for them. And I'm just, keep the whole gay community out of it for right now. There's this whole thing that just even in the straight world, if you don't make enough money for me, I'm not even dating you. Like, you're so being
toxic feminine. That's the toxic.
Totally gone the other direction. You know, the pending, we need to be in the center. We need to be in the center to appreciate and accept everyone's differences. We are not equal. And even with this whole DEI movement, I think it's all a bunch of bullshit to keep us fighting so that the billionaires on the planet can control everything. Now, who are these billionaires? There's a lot of them we don't know about, to be quite honest with you, who've been billionaires for years that we never see because they don't come out in the light. And you think about it, they control the whole planet here in the United States. Financially, George Soros and his organizations, BlackRock and State Street and all these banks, they've been buying up all the single family homes so that, you know, in communism, and Soros, he came on in 60 Minutes in 1979 and he equated himself to God and said he wants to run the planet. And the only way he can do that is if he gets control of America.
Oh my God.
And so American politicians, some follow what he's doing and some don't. I don't believe we can take the current political structures that we have and fix them. They need to be completely replaced with something that doesn't look like them. How do we make that happen? I don't know. And a lot of people want to know, how do we make that happen? Is there going to be a bunch of catastrophic events on this planet like there were 26,000 years ago, and we'll have a handful of human beings left to restart human society? And let's hope to God that they are enlightened enough spiritually where they won't oppress one another. I don't know. I've learned now to be more in tune to what I do know, be open-minded to learn the things that I don't know, which is most of what life experience is what I don't know, and what pertains to me every single day when I wake up. I can't control government systems. I have no control over that. I really don't. Will I vote as an American? Yes. Will I speak out where I see that there are injustices? Yes. Will I participate financially in supporting things that I believe in? Yes. But innately, I think most of the world, when we get up every single day, most of what's going on in the world doesn't even affect us. So what do we do as an individual? We have to live the best life we can by being focused on how do I grow today to be the best human being I can for my quality of life, as well as the quality of life of the people around me. How can I add value to myself and other people, not at the expense of another human being? And that's the thing that people forget. They always think, I've got to take from somebody else to give to myself. And it's not true. The more I grow as an individual and I put into the world, you know, sowing and reaping, right? If I eat all the food in my garden and I never replant the seeds, there's nothing coming up next year for me. Now I got to go steal from my neighbor's, you know, farm. No, our job as a human being is to find out what we're good at and to plant that into the world in some form of love, right? Love comes in many, many ways. So be be a gardener, be a farmer, plant the seeds of whatever your gift is. I have friends who are amazing musicians. And the only time they really light up is when they have a guitar in their hand or they're sitting at the piano. And sometimes their performances will be so amazing. They literally disappear from the crowd being there and they are engaged in the energy of the gift, which they're sharing. And then you'll notice that they'll come back and go, oh yeah, I was playing for a crowd. They were in the zone of self-expression. So
yes.
Find out your self-expression and be it. See, I tell people, we have to know what we want in life. We have to know why we want it. And the how is none of our damn business.
Yes.
When we start impressing how, then we start controlling the things and the people around us to manipulate things to come to us. And maybe we're not even supposed to get those things. Maybe there's something better right behind it. So what you want, why you want it, but how you're going to get it isn't your business. Whatever gave you this life energy that animates this physical body, that divine, I call it divine intelligence because I don't want to name it God. And then everybody's like, is that a male energy? Is that a female energy? Energy is what energy is. So this divine intelligence that created every living thing on this planet knows the how. How do we know that? Because we're all here.
So I've got to ask you something. Right? I got to ask you something because you have been in many relationships, and I have been in hardly any relationships. And I've been almost like going on 12 years. I'm going to be reaching Freedom 55 this year. And I'm like, why am I so single? Like, I mean, I don't mean to be like that. Like, I know I'm all complete and everything, but why is it that I'm not obtaining a partner or a wife like you? And what is it that I haven't completed within the straight world or whatever it is, that box? Like, I've never been able, I've always been real, but now here in your third chapter of your life, now you're starting to become real because you've been granted that. Whereas I've never given into the system in that way. And how is it my form of punishment that because I didn't do that?
I don't believe in punishment. I really, interesting.
Why am I being as a child,
I knew I never fit in with everybody else because everybody else thought the same way. Okay.
Yes.
And so I go, I don't know why they think like that. It doesn't make sense to me. And even the evidence they're presenting doesn't make sense.
Yes.
Now I can go along with it for a little bit because that gives me the least amount of resistance. And then I realized when I was probably in my 40s, the degree of resistance that you get is often evidence of the size of the blessing coming behind it. So it's like this. Whenever we... when I was in the Landmark Forum, they teach you about creating clearings in your life. So you don't talk about what you don't want. You talk about what you do want. So creating a clearing means that you're going to free your mind of preconceived ideas and thoughts. All right. But we are really trained as human beings through religion to get what we don't want because we're told we're nothing.
But I believe that all this perversion comes from deprivation. So why am I accepting
I don't.
So much?
I think perversion is all about power. All of it's about power. And sexual perversion is the easiest and quickest form of power to grant.
Okay, then how is it that I'm accepting so much and tolerating so much deprivation in my life? What is this? Is this something normal? Because
deprivation, you're choosing it. So here's what I would say. What's your payoff? There's always a payoff. Why are you depriving yourself of things? What's your payoff? Well, does it make you feel good that you're better than somebody else because you're not doing
I would do? Like to have a partner in my life. I would like to get married and have a wife and have a normal life like everybody. Like, I don't know the normal, but, you know, just be like...
Okay, well, here's a couple of questions. Do you live in an area where that's conducive to happen?
This is why I haven't found my place yet, because I'm still, like, trying to find that fit.
Well, you live in an area where it's conducive for you to be a lesbian.
No.
You're choosing that. You're choosing to live where you can't get what you want. Why are you doing that? What do you love about where you're at so much more that it's more important to you than an intimate relationship? What is your payoff? What are you getting by living where you can't have what you want?
Well, connection to nature and the earth and groundedness.
The planet's everywhere.
You know, I come from a concrete city called Toronto, the core of hell, as you call it, right? And you know,
totally get it. You know, I grew up between Montana and Oregon. I lived in California. I love nature. I go camping all the time, anytime I can, because I love to get into nature. Okay. And of course, I drive a truck, so I get to drive across the country. But you have to look at, see, sometimes we make decisions from constructs that were built into us in childhood that are in our subconscious mind and not our conscious mind. So that's what I try and teach people in consciousness and human potential is start to make conscious choices, not allowing your subconscious to make your choices. So I teach a couple of techniques. One thing is I teach people to write down specifically what you want. How you're going to get it, don't worry about it.
Okay.
Don't even worry about it. That's specifically right. Write, okay, I want a wife, and I want her to be in this age group, and I want her hair to be like this color, and I want her eyes this color, and I want her to either speak one language or no languages, or, you know, I want her this body type, or these are the specific things I want, and the rest of it is no big deal, you know, universe has your way. But I'm going to tell you that once you really sit down and say authentically with your heart, this is what I want, you're no longer going to be living where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be taken away from you. So that's the problem. Are you willing to sacrifice what you love right now for what you say you want more of? And know this, that once you create a clearing and say, this is what I want, everything that's not that shows up first. Because that's the test of faith. Do I believe that the divine intelligence will give me what I want? Am I worth it? You know, in Christian faith, is you're such a piece of shit, Jesus had to come and now he had to die for you because even your death isn't good enough to redeem you, even though you're created in my image.
Well, I admit to my blind spots is what I'm doing here. I'm opening up to the possibility that, you know, I'm not seeing everything. Like, you know, when you're driving and you have a blind spot.
Often what happens with people who really, really, really want to be in relationships is fear. I'm afraid they're not going to love me as much as I love them. I'm afraid they're going to leave me and hurt my feelings. I'm afraid they're going to turn out not to be who I wanted, and I'm going to invest time into them. And I'm like, for you, your middle age, how much time do you want to waste on something that may or may not work out? But man, I love it in Belize because nature is absolutely certain and it's gorgeous and I love it. And it doesn't fail me. Human beings will fail you. When I get in relationship, and listen, I had three husbands because that's what I was taught religiously to do, okay? I had one wife because that's who I'd loved since I was a teenager. And Then I dated a bunch of different people just because I'd never dated a different type of people. I just wanted to see what people were about. My wife was the first girl that I was ever serious with, and I'd known her since I was 15.
Oh, I
So
didn't
I
know
already
that.
knew who she was. I was there when her first child was born. Like, I knew her. We were close friends. We were best friends for years before we became a couple. And so then I dated a bunch of different women's because, I got stuck in this conversation of, I'm not really a lesbian. I'm in love with a being who just happens to be in a female's body. So that's what I'd say about my wife. I love who she is as a soul, as a spirit. The fact that she's housed in a woman's body doesn't matter to me. And then I had to get real with that a number of years ago, going, I really just love women. And that was a religious construct trying to me to justify being a lesbian, right? It was this convoluted thought pattern, but now I love women. And so then I dated a bunch of different women just to see what dating was like, because I came straight out of high school, got married, had my first child, got divorced, got married again, had my second child, got divorced. My third child, I actually hired a man to get me pregnant because I wanted to have my daughter. So I paid him to get me pregnant. And then we started going to church together, and they convinced us, now you have to get married because you have a child together. So it was all religion that kept me wrapped up in these conversations. So then I said, no, I want to be free. I want to be who I am. I'm a lesbian. I want to date women. So then I did, but it was very uncomfortable for me to do so. I had a really hard time, even with my wife, holding her hand in public because I'd been so oppressed by the religious world telling me I was going to hell if I was gay. We even left a church that we'd gone to for 17 years, give thousands of dollars to, because we went in there and they were trying to legalize gay marriage in the state of Illinois. And we'd already had a civil union because marriage wasn't legal then, but we had a civil union in a church. And here's our children reading these petitions, and one of the kids said to me, "Are you men and men, and women aren't supposed to be married? And if they are, they're going to hell because Jesus doesn't like that." So we left the church then. That's when I said, "I'm not going to allow them to indoctrinate my children against me." So we left. We never went back. And again, these are all mental constructs. I believe that the world teaches us not to follow our intuition and to use our head more than our intuition. And our intuition grows through meditation and breathing and good nutrition, and by just being open and never being attached to your thoughts are not the be all end all of all that there is on the planet. It's just not real. Okay. I believe that words are the most powerful things on the planet. So if you say something, something's going to come out of it. It's an energy seed planted in the soil of the universe, and something's going to come back, whether you call it karma or whatever. Something's going to happen in that. So if you really want to be in a relationship with a woman, write it down. This is what I want. Believe it. Faith comes in believing in uncertain things, right? And then how it happens, let it go. And I guarantee you that if that's really in your heart what you want, everything in your life is going to collapse. Because everything that's in the way, everything that's in the way of you having what you want, God will take away. Because you've put into your life everything that's in the way. Man, I want to drive a truck. I want to drive a truck. I want to drive a truck. You don't have a driver's license. Yeah, but I sure want to drive a truck. Well, apparently you don't, because you won't even get a car license to learn how to drive a vehicle. See, people say they want things that they're not willing to give up other things for. You can't have everything. So you have to choose what you want, and then you build on what that is.
I'm still, there's something, a little gap there in between, because the way I see it is, I would love to share my experience, the way I'm living, where I'm living, like to have the same commonality that she would want to share, the same kind of dream, the same plans, the same, things that I want to do, like,
Here's my question. Because of the culture of where you live, you're probably not going to meet anybody where you live. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to meet somebody internationally that's not going to want to come there. And if she does come there, what's she going to sacrifice and what kind of a lifestyle is she going to have to live in order to be in relationship with you?
So I would be willing to move anywhere that we can make it work together and then invest in, 50-50, because get into a kind of a partnership where it is like a marriage, but it's also like a business that we can work together and build our dreams together and share everything together till this reality do us part, or
Yeah, and I think a lot of people want that. And I know a lot of people who are married, who've been married for years. And I know people that have been married for years that the wife went off with all the girls and did the girl group, and the husband, they go and do their golf thing. And then them as a couple, they go and do their thing. I know a lot of lesbian relationships where they act the same way. I don't like your friends, I'm going to go hang out with my friends. You go hang out with your friends because they have different hobbies and interests. But then as a couple, they do a lot of things together. And it works. My best friend Shelly right now, her and her partner, they work together at the business that he owns. They grow the business together. They're talking about owning multiple businesses and growing them together.
Right?
I'm one of their business
Yes,
partners.
together.
So, and
Right?
it works really, really well. For some people, that works really, really well. You definitely have to have a certain type of personality that says, I'm open to looking at your way and my way
Together.
so both of us can make it work, because just
Yes.
one person's way isn't going to make it work. And
Yes.
generally, if that's what you really want, usually the person who'll come into your life, they'll actually see things from a completely different perspective from you, where you'll be like, wow, I never noticed that. And then you're like, mind blown, because yeah, it's like, the old thing, if you have a glass of water sitting on the table and there's a straw in it and the straw is leaning, you're sitting across from me, you're going to see it leaning to the left, I'm going to see it leaning to the right, and we're both correct because we're sitting in different perspectives.
And we can coach one another, right? We can be each other's
And then you laugh
coaches.
about it. It's like, oh my God, I'm not looking at it from your perspective. Let me run around to your side of the table. Holy cow, it
Right.
really is leaning left over here. Oh, come over here. Oh my God, it really is leaning right over here. Let's look all the way around it and see every perception of it. And now, what's the next best choice to whatever our product or service is to enhance the world, monetize it, and enhance our life? There's nothing wrong with monetizing what works. And yeah, you will get those relationships. I have a lot of friends that they have those type of relationships. Again, anytime you want something that's different than what you currently have, there is going to be a sacrifice, because two things cannot operate in the same space at the same time. Okay, think about it. You're
Also
sitting
thinking
where,
sex too, right?
well, you're sitting where you're sitting, right? Think of this. You're sitting where you're sitting. If somebody came and sat on top of you, it would appear as though both of you guys are occupying the same space at the same time, but you're not. You're both occupying two different degrees of that space.
For
Now, as
sure.
far as sex goes, I don't generally do a lot of things about sex because everybody views sex differently, and the majority of the world of perversion on this planet is in human trafficking and sex, because some people see sex as a tool to manipulate you to get something from you. Some people use it right now. It's being used as a torture device in the Middle Eastern war. Some people withhold sex as a punishment. Women and sex, actually, my friend Fassel and I had a conversation about this, and
Are
he
they
was talking
withholding for
about
me?
sex being the biggest commodity of manipulation on the planet, right? My personal feeling about sex is that I'm a very energy driven person, so I'm not going to give my energy away to somebody who could corrupt it or hurt me with it or not appreciate it. So if I'm going to take
Exactly.
my time out to have a physical interaction with you, that's an expression of how I feel about you and being in relationship with you. I'm not going to
Yes.
waste that energy. I even have stopped shaking people's hands and hugging people.
Me too.
And I've gotten
Exactly.
more to the kind of Sadhguru with,
Yes.
okay, because you don't know what they're doing in the other area of your life, and energy does transfer. It
Exactly.
transfers. you know. So it's really funny. I'm here in Michigan at my house in Michigan. My girlfriend, she has a lot of physical ailments because she has MS. I'm out on the road. I'm fine. I'm jumping in out of my truck like I'm 25 years old. I'm walking. Don't have any problem getting in and out of bed. I come home. I try and get out of bed this morning. My back is locked up. I stand up. I can't hardly walk because I'm in an environment full of energy stunted energy, of pain, of suffering, of physical inabilities. And I've been working on a project where I physically haven't been able to physically use my hands to manipulate some things that when I sit in my truck, I don't have any problem doing because in my truck, it's only me. So I'm around other energy that's physically impacting my life. And so I'm like, okay. I said to her this morning, how'd you sleep? Well, I didn't do this. And then tells me the list of ailments that she had suffered last night. And I woke up with the same things that I don't wake up with, and I'm alone in my truck. So people don't understand how the impact of being around other people physically, mentally, and emotionally and spiritually affects you and your human experience. So I got a text message from somebody today who I haven't spoken to in probably a year and a half, business partner of mine. We used to be very much involved in talking daily, doing business. Found out she's doing a lot of cocaine, she's drinking a lot, she's lost her houses, she can't go stay with her family, and she's texting me, and I didn't answer because I'm like, I'm not bringing that mess into my life. I don't have to. It adds no value to me. And I tried to help her get help before. I'm not in the business of rescuing people. I give you all the tools. If you don't want to use them, I've done my part, and I'm not going to allow you to take me down a rabbit hole that I brought myself out of 30 years ago. So then my daughter's like, hey, why is so-and-so contacting me? And I'm like, you have no relationship with this person whatsoever. So I texted this person. I said, why are you contacting my daughter? Well, I'm trying to talk to you. I said, I have nothing to say to you. We completed our conversation a year ago. Please do not contact my daughter. And it comes back, well, what did I ever do to you? And I waited a minute to answer, and I finally said, you didn't do anything to me. I'm choosing a life of value and no mess. And so you don't fit into what I have chosen as my new life model. And I'm okay with that.
So it looks like you've done a
A
lot.
lot of people are so lonely.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of people are so lonely they're not willing to get rid of people. And what I found out is, and it's really funny, the more you advance your life, you do not have to look around in your life and go, oh, you got to go, you got to go, you got to go. You don't have to do that. The more you grow as an individual and advance your life, they legitimately just fade away. Because your vibration, your kinetic energy attracts to it that which it is, and it repels that which it's not. You don't have to do any work of cutting anybody out. If you're living your authentic life, anybody who's not authentic in their life, they automatically go away. So you don't even have to deal with it.
So is this what they
And
mean
people don't know.
by useless eaters? Because I'm starting to learn now that the majority, like I'm not taking any sides, but I'm listening to everything and I'm bringing meaning through my experience. So is this what it means to be a useless eater?
I don't know. I've never heard that term before, so I have
Like
no
these people
cognition
who
on
are
that.
not authentic, who are not authentic, and who are not really, they're lame as professionals. And they treat you like a fool, but in return, in reality, they are the fools. Are these the ones who are the useless eaters who just do things for money, but not for real results? You know, are these the use? Because I'm
I
starting to
think.
experience who they really are.
I think that the majority of the world is inauthentic because we've been taught through religious and political oppression, and mostly by being raised to live inside the opinions of other people, that people are inauthentic because they're always trying to look good, be good, and live up to somebody else's expectation of them. I call myself a dream builder. I teach people how to dream into themselves. You know, I'll go out and believe in other people more than they believe in themselves, until they can believe in themselves more. And then I celebrate them. Whenever somebody's having success in their life and anybody else is jealous of it, they're inauthentic. Because authentic people want to see everybody win, including themselves. You cannot celebrate your successes with everybody. Think about that. You get my friend Johnny Wimbry told me a long time ago, he said, be careful who you celebrate with, because not everybody wants you to win. And why? When you begin to outgrow people, they'll say, oh, you think you're better than me. And the truth is, what they're really saying is, I'm not good enough. And you make me feel even worse and not good enough, because they're not being authentic and admitting, I think poorly of myself. And they got to go all the way back and go, I think poorly of myself is because my religion taught me that, or my teacher taught me that, or more often than not, my parents taught me that I'm nothing. So in order to get, we have to let go of mental constructs. We have to wipe the canvas of our soul clean, and we get to paint the new picture. We have the power to paint that picture, but most people don't, because they're scared. People like certainty. And sir, I tell my friends all the time, they're like, Esther, you can't stand change. Yeah, I don't like change, but I love adventure. Like, I'll plan a bunch of stuff, but if somebody calls me up and goes, motorcycle ride, 5 o'clock, and I'll be like, oh, I'm supposed to have dinner with so-and-so. Let me think. Do they got a motorcycle? They got a bike too. Let me call. We're going. Like, last minute, let's go. Bike ride, right? Or, hey, you want to go camping this weekend? Oh, well, I'm supposed to be hanging out with my daughter and going to a remodeling thing. I'll call her up. I've invited her to go camping. She goes, you love it. Go. So most people, though, is they will be so worried about what other people think of them that they will sacrifice feeling good to make somebody else think highly of them, even though they're suffering. You called that people pleasing. I think it's bigger than people pleasing. I think it's egoic self-feed and self-martyrdom, okay? My friends count on me. My friends know, all of my really close friends know, they could call me any time of the day, day or night, 24/7. They even know if it's really bad, they can wake me up, even though I only get so many hours a night driving my truck, that I'll call my boss and say, hey, I didn't get any sleep because I was on my phone with my friend last night because their husband died. Like, I'll sacrifice money for friendship any day. I'll sacrifice anything. People know they can count on me because I have a level of integrity that most people don't have. But my integrity stems from me being my authentic self. And my authentic self is, I'm not going to compromise myself to satisfy what you think of me.
Do you believe?
Most of what you think of me is really what you think of yourself.
Yes. Exactly. Do you believe that there is such thing as enemies, or is that a mindset that, you know, that is that something that, I don't know, we need to acknowledge?
Yes, okay. So historically, wars have all been fought over three things: women, land, and religion.
Okay.
All wars are fought over women, land, and religion. That's men fighting over women, land, and religion, okay?
But do you believe in enemies? Do you believe
now,
in
actual enemies? Yeah, I think that there are people, and I often think that sometimes your enemies are actually people who used to be really close to you, are tremendously jealous of you for two reasons. They didn't accomplish what you accomplished, and they thought they were going to accomplish that with you or instead of you. So they feel bad about themselves, and now they're pissed off, and their life is shit because of who you are and what you've done. They create themselves as this enemy, and then they try and attack you. Absolutely. I believe in that. I don't believe that I was born and then like enemies were born to come after me. No, I don't believe that. I believe that enemies are created when the people around you have some kind of a thought and expectation of who they want you to be. And then when you turn out not to be that, now you're their enemy. I don't have enemies because I don't go, oh, I'm there, like, I'm going to get them, you know, like that. And I learned this a long time. Landmark teaches this. This is what I discovered about myself inside of the Landmark education when I took the Landmark forum, is they have this statement that says, love people for who they are and who they're not. And that's all they say. They don't give any more explanation to that. And I really thought about that. I'm like, What's that mean? And so this is what I discovered what it means to me.
But
And
is that
any community.
enemy, is that enemy an internal thing that is part of us that we need to
So listen to
resolve?
this. So
Okay.
this brings some light to it. Love everyone for who they are and who they're not. Who are they? That's the first question. If I got to love them for who they are, who are they? Everybody is created equal. Not equal skill, equal opportunity. Okay? We're all created as a human being on the planet. That's the only thing that we all are. We're all created. Love them for who they are. They're another human being. But also love them for who they're not. What's that mean? Who they're not is who you need them to be, want them to be, or expect them to be for your own benefit. And
Yes.
everybody does it.
See,
So
but
if
that
you
makes me
expect them,
vulnerable.
yeah. You know, I expected my mom to be a much better mother than who she was until we took a 13-hour drive from Montana to Oregon and I asked her some very hard questions and then she told me about her life. And then when I saw my mother as a child, as a teenager, as a wife, then I saw her more than just a mother and I understood that through the life choices that she was raised in, she didn't have any more skills to be a better mother than the one that I was given.
Yes, so all is forgiven, and that's great. And you know, I think we're running
And
over
I
an hour.
recognized most of my strength. Most of my strength I got from her.
So I think that there's so much more to you, Esther. And I think if we continue on like this, we might have to run into a second episode. So if you would like, I would love to bring you on again for a second episode.
Yeah, you know, I say life is a conversation and the conversation always grows.
Yeah, because there's so much more that we haven't really, like, you just kind of, you're very fiery, you know?
I'm a very passionate human being, there's no doubt.
So with that note, is there anything you would like to leave with us in closing?
Yeah, I would say that probably some fundamental things that help us live life. Number one, the most important person to forgive in your life is yourself. Give yourself grace and mercy. Don't believe everything is true just because somebody else said so. And don't believe that everybody's smarter than you. Because at the end of the day, when you die, the only one you're taking with you is you. And the best life that you can live is realizing that you do matter. And everybody has a specialness about them. No one's more special than anybody else. And it's okay if you think you're living an average life. Average is just a description somebody else put together. Live your life where you're happy, where you have laughter, where you feel and give love, and build on the relationships that give you value in life and make you love experience in your life.
That's well said.
That's all I got.
Thumbs, I've noticed there was a thumb up down on you. I don't know. Yes,
there we go.
Friend.
Double thumbs.
Yes, my friend. Thank you so very much. It was such a blessing to have you on here. I can call you Reverend, if that's okay, Reverend Esther.
You can, you know, what's the saying here in America? You can call me whatever you want as long as you don't call me late for dinner because I love some food.
My friend, thank you so very much. And until next time, I hope to see you here again for another season or another episode. Whenever you can, make yourself available. It would be an honor and a blessing to have you.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for staying in contact with me. I appreciate it, Maria.
Thank you. Bye-bye.